This is the Kona Edge, the home of Ironman triathletes who dream of qualifying for the World Championships on the Big Island.
Hey, welcome on to this edition of the Kona Edge. It's awesome to have you with us. I don't know about you, but things have sort of returned back to normal this week. As I'm recording this today, our schools go back to start a new school year here in South Africa. So as far as traffic goes, everything back to normal. Rush hour traffic in the mornings, not fun, but I guess it is what it is. And it comes with the territory, I suppose. But I hope your 2017's got off to a pretty good start. Our vacation was fantastic, but everything rocking and rolling once again. I almost get the feeling that I never took a break, but life goes on, I guess. It's awesome to have you with us today, and I'm super excited to share another amazing Ironman Kona story with you on the podcast. It's a brand new year, and things are growing really nicely. If you haven't left us a review or rating on iTunes yet, please do. Towards the end of last year, we gave away an entry into an Ironman race. We're doing it again for 2017. So if you haven't left us a review on iTunes, all you have to do is just search for The Kona Edge in iTunes. Click on it, click on the subscribe button, and then leave a review. And you can leave us a 5-star, 1-star, doesn't really matter. We love the feedback, and I appreciate the feedback. We've got some amazing feedback over the last few months. So if you wouldn't mind doing that, what it does is it just really helps us get in front of more people, because the more reviews we get and the more better reviews we get, so to speak, the more iTunes rates us and puts us higher up in the search ranking. So when someone's searching for a triathlon podcast or for Ironman, we show up well in those search rankings. So if you wouldn't mind helping us out, it definitely does. We've seen a huge spike in our downloads since we've been pushing it. So, yeah, please keep on. It's hugely appreciated. But enough about me waffling. Today's story is pretty cool because I love talking about ultra running and the role that plays in triathlon, particularly Ironman triathlon. And, super, super stoked to welcome our next guest onto the podcast. And, we'll chat for the next half hour or so with Barry Lewis. We head to Philadelphia now on the Kona Edge, and it's an absolute pleasure to welcome our next guest onto the show, Barry Lewis. Barry, welcome. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you so much for the honor of being with you.
Barry, it's great to have you on. We were chatting before we started recording. It's an absolutely gorgeous, as we record this, a gorgeous summer's day in Cape Town on the southern tip of Africa. And you're sitting in the big freeze in Philly. It's two total opposite extremes, isn't it?
I think we're expected to get to about 10 degrees with the wind chill, 10 degrees Fahrenheit today, and probably lower tonight, although I have to say that's pretty warm compared to the center of the country right now. So we've been really lucky here and dodging some major bullets from the Arctic blast so far. But it's coming. It's that time of year. We expect it.
Thank goodness for central heating is all you can say, I'm sure.
Yes.
But talking of the cold, Barry, you come from a pretty interesting background. You're not originally from the States. You're originally from Canada. And you were telling me that you ended up in Philly by running an ultramarathon in Russia, I believe.
Yes, kind of a convoluted pathway, certainly. I grew up in Vancouver, British Columbia, beautiful part of the country, fairly mild West Coast weather, loved trail running and whatnot. And I heard about this crazy race across Siberia that was to take place in the summer of 89. And North Korea was the destination from Lake Baikal. It turned out that it didn't quite work out that way, but at any rate, along the way, I met some fellows from Philadelphia that were involved in the video production business. I was a freelance writer, photographer at the time. I delved a little bit into video with some community cable stations at home, and we had mutual interests, and I came here to explore some opportunities and somehow managed to never leave.
I love that. Got married and that's home now. But obviously, like you say, you come from an ultra running background. As a child growing up, were you fairly active? Were you sporty? I'm guessing coming from Canada, you must have played a bit of hockey.
I did play some hockey, mostly soccer, footy, I guess, as a lot of folks would know it, but mostly soccer. But I played lacrosse and ice hockey, and I played rugby and all those sorts of things that we did. And as I got older, sort of through through into college years, I found that just the practices for rugby or lacrosse or whatever weren't enough. I did a lot more running in between to stay fit. I was always in a running position, being a smaller guy. I was a wing or outside center or something along those lines. And so I just ran a lot and just found I loved it. I loved running in the woods and playing in the woods, and running to me was just kind of play.
There's one thing about running, and there's another thing about running long. When did you realize you loved running long?
Gosh, you know, one of my rugby teammates actually in about 1981 convinced me to do a marathon with him. We said we'll train through the fall and winter and do a marathon in the spring, and after about 2 months of training, we found a marathon in November instead of May, which was our target. And I said, you know, I don't know if I can do all this hammering on the road for so long. Let's just go run the race in November instead. So we did this race in Seattle, and it actually went quite well. And it was sort of one of those, gee, you know, this actually isn't so bad. The race part of it was more fun than the training at that point. But then I started really getting into trail running that winter, and it just, after doing a few marathons, I found, you know, I like being in the woods rather than pounding the roads, and ultra marathons were not a lot going on, pretty few and far between at the time, but I kind of stumbled upon a few here and there and learned about your famous one, Comrades, way back then, and thought, boy, that's something to think about that would be pretty exciting. But I just found that you know, the idea of being out in the woods all day was pretty compelling, and it really was fun for me, and I really enjoyed it and was able to kind of keep going, I found. So
were you pretty good from the start? Have you gotten better with time, or did you have some sort of ability to start with?
You know, it's interesting. I kind of go back to the days around then. I was doing a lot of winter hiking with my brother and stuff, and he was, you know, he actually did Ironman Canada way back in the early few years of Ironman Canada when that came along, and I would go hiking with him in the winter for training. He would train with a backpack on, all this sort of stuff, but he would just go and go and go and go. And his destination was always somewhere, a summit or something like that. And I became more about the process of sort of stopping to see the view or just, you know, thinking about, you know, what was around the next corner or whatever. And I found that I enjoyed the time spent rather than the destination so much. And so that just became something that interested me. And I think it started me on this journey to sort of think about what was around the next corner and what you could do mentally if you just sort of didn't have that end destination in mind, but sort of said, you know what, I'll go over the top and around the corner and around the other side and see what might be there. So I wouldn't say it was necessarily something that came easily, but that I was always interested and open to the experience and exploring. And I learned pretty quickly, I guess, after doing the marathon and feeling like, okay, you know, the first marathon you do, you think I couldn't run another step of my life depended on it. But then suddenly you hear about a 50K and you say, gosh, it's another 5 miles. No way, no possible way. But then you just extend that barrier out a little bit and that becomes your destination. You realize you can do it. And then it's 50 miles and then it's 100K and then it's 100 miles. And of course, along the way, you have to learn about what works for you training-wise, how injury-prone you may or may not be nutritionally and hydrationally, what's going to work for you. And you go through all of those learning pains. And back in the early 90s, I guess, early 80s, when I was doing that, there wasn't nearly the sophistication or knowledge about all this stuff that there is today. So it was kind of, you know, there was a lot of trial and error for a lot of us that were doing those things back then. And you know, just came along. But I liked the being out there, but I also found that I liked competing. I liked the competition. It wasn't necessarily about the result, but it was about being in a venue that allowed you to compete always brought your bar up a little higher and sort of forced you to explore a little more deeply what you were capable of. And as you know, as you hear people in competition talk about, you know, it's when you're in a great deep field, you're always having to bring your best, and you'll always do your best. Mm. I feel. And so it's fun exploring that. And that became really, really neat to me, was just being able to both be out there and do the experience part of it, but also sort of dig deep and see what you're capable of.
Yeah, Barry, and I think, I'm not sure if it's the same in the States, but it's definitely not that way here when it comes to ultramarathon running. There's no major competition within the age groups in ultramarathoning here, but in triathlon, and it's like this wherever you go, there's massive competition within the age groups. And was that the attraction, that one of the things that got you into triathlon, was the being able to compete with guys on the same level as you from an age perspective to see how good you were compared to them?
You know, actually, no, it wasn't quite, you know, so defined as that. You know, so my brother, as I mentioned, did early Ironman Canada and whatnot. And that's in the early days, that was just beyond comprehension. My head would explode if I tried to wrap it around actually doing an Ironman. There was just no possible way. But then as I got into I did a couple of early short odd distance triathlons in those days, and it was fun, but it was something that was hard to do. I was traveling a lot and different jobs, and I just found I always came back to running. It was just always something that I could do very simply wherever I was, you know, and I came back to it. I really enjoyed it. It was a great way to explore if I was traveling. So as I got into ultras, then I kind of found this notion of, you know what, you can go beyond what you might have thought possible. So fast forward 20 years of running ultras, I'd done a lot of races all over, and probably how I got into tries as a mature athlete was the result of having a bit of a knee injury. I did this multi-day stage race in the Himalayas and twisted my knee, actually, you know, the second to last day, and I got through the race and finished fine. But then, you know, after traveling for a week or so afterwards, I found that my knee just locked up. I had a real IT band issue and just needed some time off running, and so jumped in the pool. And I heard then, by that time, Xterra off-road triathlons were coming along, and of course you're a pioneer in the sport over there. Conrad Stoltz.
Yep.
The pinnacle of the sport, and that really interested me in thinking about, you know, geez, I'm getting back into swimming, triathlon, that'd be fun, but I'm so in love with the trails. Gee, maybe these off-road tries would be a fun thing to do. So I just decided, you know what, let me just set a goal of doing some off-road tries. And so it was really nothing so concrete as to I need to compete, I need to feel that again. It was just I'd done ultras for 20 years, and look, I was getting older and thought, you know, gosh, it's kind of fun. Then this thing got into my head that, you know, after doing tries for a couple of years, I was fortunate enough to go to Maui for the Xterra Worlds. I was about to turn 50 and thought, you know, geez, that Ironman Kona would be a pretty amazing thing to do. And by then I'd done road tries and was doing relatively well. And, new guys who were kind of Kona folks and just kind of appealed to me. So I said, you know, that I'm going to set that as a goal. I want to get to Kona. And why not do it when I turn 50? And amazingly, I managed to meet that goal on, you know, my first attempt. I actually qualified at a 70.3, which, you know, a few years ago there were a handful of 70.3s that were Kona qualifiers. And my first Ironman actually was in Kona.
Wow, that's phenomenal. Barry, but I find it interesting, and I know this is something you're fascinated with, is the mental side of things. And just from a triathlon perspective, you said that you thought about Ironman, especially in the early days, and thought, gee, that's crazy. Yeah, that's just way further than I ever want to go. And it's the same thing, like you say, with ultramarathons. And you mentioned comrades, and the same thing happens. Yeah, people run a 5K, and they think, I could never run 10Ks. They then run a 10, and they go, I could never run a half marathon, but they can do a half marathon. And it's the same thing with triathlon, where your first sprint, you're absolutely broken, and you think, oh, there's no ways I could do a standard or an Olympic distance, but you get there, and then you keep pushing beyond, and then you do a half Ironman, and then you go the full Ironman, and then you can be totally crazy and go even beyond that. But it's I don't want to say it's a decision, but your mind has to go there before your body can. Tell me a little bit about your thinking and the strength that you've gained from ultramarathon running and how that's helped your triathlon career.
Well, you know, that's always, you're right. It's always been fascinating to me. And I've, you know, again, I've had really good fortune to have raced for a lot of years, stayed relatively healthy in the process and met a lot of incredible people that have really, you know, been able to do that and sustain these efforts for these long distances. You know, quite some time ago, I was, before I got into tris, actually, when I was doing ultras and I was doing some freelance writing for some magazines around and had the opportunity to do a few articles with triathletes. So I interviewed the likes of Paula Newby-Fraser and Aaron Baker and Dave Scott. And I'll never forget this. Gosh, I can't even remember how long ago this was now, but interviewing Dave Scott after he was right still in the pinnacle there. And we just started talking before we were doing the formal interview, as you and I were, and we comparing backgrounds. And I said, oh, gosh, you know, I triathlon, it just blows my mind. My brother did Ironman Canada a couple times in the early days, and, you know, then he moved on to other things. And I just can't wrap my head around it. And at any rate, he somehow asked about what I was up to. And I said, well, you know, I've done a few marathons and a couple ultras, and said, well, what sort of ultras? I said, well, a couple hundred milers. And he was the other way. He said, I can't even conceive of doing a 100 miler. That just to me is mind blowing. So, you know, it kind of becomes about where you are and that individual experience and realizing from other people that everybody's at a bit of a different place, but you can see what other people are able to do and you kind of learn to manage the things. You know, as we always say in the ultra world, you know, it's never always going to keep getting worse. So you find if you allow yourself to conceive of going past that boundary, the marathon distance, which is kind of that place that everybody says, I couldn't imagine going one more step. But you say, well, 50K isn't that much farther. Let's just try and get there. And then you experience that one day, then you say, well, why does that have to be the limit? Why can't I go beyond? And even on the way to that 50K point, you'll probably be in a hole at some stage where you're hurting and thinking that exact thought that, you know, I can't go another step. But then you remember when you hit the wall in your first marathon at 20 miles or in your first long training run that might have been at 13 miles and you got through it. You pushed a little farther than the next time and you gradually progress. So it becomes these experiences that kind of pile upon each other that you can always go back to and remember when. The first time you ran that you thought, gosh, getting around the block was a big accomplishment. And then, as you say, it's a mile and then it's a 5K. And so, you know, the limitations really truly are perception in so many ways. And you know, in the life, the endurance sports world, you see them all the time. And we're seeing these barriers broken down every year in many, many ways, whether it's people of a certain age doing incredible things, times in marathons, completing Ironman, completing Western States or Comrades, you know, running the Appalachian Trail or across America in these unbelievable times through conditions that you can't even conceive of being out for a few hours, let alone for 42, 46, 48 days nonstop. You know, it's unbelievable. And it's all of those are examples of what the mind's able to overcome.
Yeah, I think the body gives up way before the mind does. And it's one of those things that I've learned, and I'm sure you can attest to this, Barry. Like, if you run a marathon or if you run a 50K or further, you're going to hurt. There's no two ways about it. Your body takes a pounding and it hurts. It doesn't hurt more the longer you go. You just hurt for longer. And I think that is one of the biggest mindset shifts that I've had to make, that yes, at mile 10 in an Ironman, you tired and you sore. It's not going to get better, but it's not going to get much worse. You've just got to keep going and you just got to keep pushing.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, it's funny, in the ultra world of racing, I would think I would finish a 50K or a 50 miler. And, you know, you're always hurting at the end. And I would think, gosh, I'm glad to be done. You know, I only hurt for 6 hours, for those people that are out there that are suffering for 9 hours or 10 hours or 12 hours. And this and the person that finished it, you know, an hour before me is saying the same thing. That so, you know, it's all a relative condition. But yeah, you can really decide how you're going to view it. It's all about perception and attitude. How are you going to, you're going to say, geez, you know, this hurts, I can't do it. Or you're going to say, you know, yeah, it hurts as you know, one of the famous quotes of our friend Chris McCormack, and, you know, embrace the suck, and numerous versions of that kind of thinking are part of the game. You've got to get comfortable being uncomfortable. You know, it is part of this stuff. And that's something that I just think it's fascinating to explore, you know, what of that we can handle. You know, and where our benchmark is, where our level of ability is. And that's something, again, that I think, you know, we don't know. People are showing us new boundaries all the time.
Absolutely. And you talk about embracing the suck and being in those dark places and knowing. And again, I think it's something that ultras have taught me, and it's definitely helped in my Ironman career. And I'm not saying that everyone who wants to do well in an Ironman should go and run an ultra, but it's definitely going to teach you some lessons about digging deep and really hanging tough when you don't want to be out there and you want to give up. What are some of the things or some of the strategies and tactics that you've taken out of things you've learned out of ultra running that you have employed in your triathlon career?
You know, I think it's about, you know, at different points, there are different things that you can come back to as your touchstone, whether you like to disassociate at different periods of time where you just let your mind sort of drift, or whether there are times when that discomfort is so intense and so severe that you can't get away from it. You've got to sort of look at it and say, okay, what is it about this situation that I can control? What can I do to divert my mind a little bit? Let me think about, you know, am I hydrated? What do I want at that next aid station? How's my pedal stroke? Is my running form good? Am I too tight in my shoulders or my arms? Am I clenching my fists or my teeth? Am I relaxed and fluid? You know, you can bring all of these kinds of thoughts to the forefront and just push the discomfort to the background for a little while. And, you know, you think about running to the next aid station. We in ultra, sometimes you're out there and you think about running to the next totem pole or over to the next telephone pole or over the next rise or just get around the corner or get. So it's kind of that idea of how do you eat an elephant, right? One bite at a time. You can't conceive of the whole thing. I'm not advocating eating elements. I'm a vegetarian. But the idea being that, you know, don't take in this whole overwhelming picture at once. Just try and get through the next step or the next moment, the next few little bits. And as you say, it's not always going to keep getting worse. Amazingly, you know, these deep holes, you can come out of them and you can be floating on clouds.
Yeah, absolutely. And I learned early on, it was my dad who said it to me. He said, when you're running an ultra, or if you're really in the hurt box in an Ironman, just the good news is that patch is not going to, if you're feeling bad, it's not going to last forever. When you're feeling good, the bad news is that's not going to last forever either. So you've really just got to embrace the moment, live in the now, and really just suck it up and just keep on going. Barry, what are you most proud of? If you look at your sort of athletic career up to date, what have you done that you're most proud of?
You know, I would have to say I'm just most proud of being in the game still and enjoying it and having longevity in the sport. So both in ultras and in triathlon, you know, I've been very fortunate. I've done relatively well, sure, but you know, I just love the process and I love the experience. I love the communities. And probably I'm most proud of, because of that and because of being able to perform, that I've inspired other folks. So, you know, I get a real charge out of somebody saying, you know, geez, you know, you're 57 and still out there doing it and doing it at a level that I can't even conceive of at half your age. But I'm going to keep working, and you'll keep me in the game because I know that I can still do it when I'm your age. And those sorts of things really, I think I'm most proud of. The rest of it, frankly, you know, look, I'm honored and it's a privilege to get to Kona. No question about it. But that's the gravy, you know what I mean? That experience, there's nothing like it. And I wish everybody could experience it. But it's something that, you know, you have to work for. And I'm very fortunate enough to have you know, been able to get there. But, you know, at the end of the day, I think it's just about being true to the sport and being clean, being honest, being open, being, just a part of the community. It's really a thrill and a privilege.
You talk about being 57 and racing the times that you are. I mean, Kona 2016 at 57, you finished third in your age group, 10:17:47, I think, overall time with a 107 swim, 5:26 bike, and a 3:35 run. Like you say, I mean, at 57, that's nothing to scoff at. That's very, very decent.
Well, thanks. You know, I there's always room for improvement, you know? And that's what's fun too. You know, it's awesomely fun, frankly, to have, you know, younger guys that, you know, on local races or whatever races that you can be competing against, and just, you know, they're comparing themselves to you and they might be blown away. But I always feel like, you know, you want to do what you can do. And what I think is so fun about triathlon is because of the three disciplines and because of all the variables. You know, people used to talk about a marathon, you know, there's never a certain outcome in a marathon because there's so many variables. Well, that's the one last part of an Ironman. If you think about it, how many variables do you face during a total race, and how many little management decisions do you have to make? And that process, you know, I don't know if there's really ever a perfect race where everything is just seamless, and you could say, you know what, I could never have improved upon that because my swim was perfect. I didn't get whacked in the face. I didn't go off course. I swam so straight. I came out of transition like I was flying. You know, all of the little things that happened throughout the race. So you kind of look back and say, geez, you know, I could have got some time there. And if this hadn't happened, or if I hadn't been this stupid and done that, you know, and that's fun. I mean, that's really, it's fun. It's exciting, and it makes you want to get out there again.
I was going to say, is that the reason you keep going back, is because there's always unfinished business? It doesn't matter how fast you go or how good it's been, there's always that one thing that you could have done better?
Sure. That's certainly part of it. Yeah, absolutely. You know, there's always tweaking. We always want to be the best we can be. And you know, it's funny. I'll go back to ultra marathon, and you know, in my early days, I was, you know, I kind of, you know, you cut your teeth for a couple of days, and then you feel like you're competitive, and you win a couple races, and you're racing, and you're digging deep, and you're never not hurting at the end of a race. And I remember a couple of years of that, and then thinking, geez, you know, there are these people out there, they're older, and they're just kind of cruising and having a good old time, and you know, the aid stations of traveling buffet, and I can't wait until I get to that point where I don't feel like I have to be competitive and I can just go and just be there. But you know what, Brad, for me, that point's never going to come. I always want to be there, and whatever level, you know, I can be at, I want to. And obviously I've learned that that's something that fuels me and fires me up, and that I really, I always want to just see what I can get out of myself. And so that to me is, yeah, it's really a thrill. Competing is fun.
Mm. You mentioned you've been lucky enough to go to Kona a few times. You've experienced it. You mentioned some of the incredible ultra marathons that you've been privileged to run, and some that are still on your list, like Comrades as an example. What do you still want to achieve on the Big Island? Are you going to keep going back as long as you can, or is it a case of you chasing something and then you look for the next challenge?
Gosh. Well, you know, look, I'd be disingenuous if I say I wouldn't love to stand on the top rung of that podium at Kona. You know, absolutely, that would be the thrill of a lifetime. But frankly, being at the starting line, Every year that I've been there has been more exciting than the last. And so, you know, things a little more, you're involved in the scene, just the energy and the pros and the people you get to know and the experience is just, as I say, it's really, really something special. It just doesn't exist anywhere else. And so being a part of that is incredible. When I started, you know, I had that one time goal of I'd love to go to Hawaii and race Kona. It would be an unbelievable experience. And then, you know, you kind of get the bug and you think, oh, geez, you know, I learned something here and this Ironman thing is pretty fun and pretty cool and pretty amazing community. And I'd never intended to go back and back and back, but it's just sort of happened. This time around in preparation, I said, you know, this might be my last time for a while. It's getting more expensive. There are issues coming along with numbers of people and, you know, you probably heard some of the controversy around drafting and whatnot that really kind of was, you know, really apparent this year more than in the past, I think, in a lot of ways. And so, you know, it's not that it's lost its luster or appeal for me, but certainly I have other things that I like to do. I'm feeling the pull of the trails more and more. There are more amazing ultramarathon experiences out there than there ever were when I was really in the thick of it back in the day. And so there's some pretty compelling races that I'd love to do out there. I'd love to get back to Kona, certainly, you know, maybe when I age up next or the time after that, I'll give it a shot and see what I can do. You know, I'm not saying definitely I'd like to be back there and I'd like to be on the top step of that podium in my age group. That'd be pretty fun. I mean, I'm pretty proud of what I've been able to do there, but you know, I've always felt like I haven't quite had that perfect race there. Look, let's be honest. It's an incredibly challenging place to be. Those conditions are unlike anything. And you know, everything just has to be perfect for you to be that top guy on the day. And it'll be pretty neat to be there.
You mentioned the drafting issue at Kona 2016. You also mentioned you're pretty proud of racing clean and sort of being honest. Those are two sort of big issues that are facing the sport at the moment. And I say two issues. I mean, they essentially go into one. It's cheating, and that is something we're all battling with. What's your take on the dopers and the drafters?
You know, I mean, dopers, I just think, you know, seriously, I mean, is it that important that you have to cheat in that way? I mean, look, drafting, sometimes, you're in a big line and you do your darndest to get away from it and whatnot. And you kind of almost have to treat Kona sometimes out on the Queen K as a series of intervals because you've got to, you know, you got to get around people and then you got to back off when you're running out of juice. It's a very different race, you know, than it might be if it was, you know, not so congested at times, you know, but and so I really try to be cognizant of that. Sometimes you get stuck and you know, you can't avoid but be in a line. Otherwise, you're doing nothing but going backwards. But I think it's important that you attempt to, and you see, you know, a lot of obvious stuff. I remember a couple times in races where, you know, big groups have gone by and, you know, or someone just ahead of you, even not that many people, a couple or three, and they're obviously just doing a pace line kind of thing. And, you know, you might go by them and say something and they'll curse you out and say, you know, whatever, you know, I think that's it's not right, but that's, you know, the way some people are in life. But doping, there's no room and no. I think it's an absolute travesty that people are doping, and you know, you do hear about it more and more in the amateur ranks, and as you move up in age, you know, people, you know, there's all this low T stuff going around that, oh, you know, my doctor, because of, you know, all the other implications of testosterone levels. And you know, again, I just think it's sad that people want it that badly and are willing to do that.
Yeah, absolutely. Barry, the physical toll of doing an Ironman on your body, particularly as you get older, is pretty big. How many of these things do you think you've still got in you physically?
Oh gosh. You know, I think just in terms of training and training volume and listening to your body, you know, I think that's something that I'm fortunate in, that through my ultra experiences and into my triathlon career, I've been pretty good at being in tune. And when something's going a little awry, I'll deal with it pretty quickly. And so I haven't been sidelined for any length of time. I've had a couple bone breaks from a crash or something like that. But, you know, other than that, I've been pretty fortunate, touch wood. But I think increasingly that being in tune with yourself and what's feasible and recovery process and good nutrition, enough sleep, not overtraining, doing the right kind of work at the right time, all those things are incredibly important. But I've never thought about having like a limited career because of any reason other than maybe someday I wouldn't want to do it. I've never felt like, oh, I'm going to be physically incapable. I just don't. I think I'm, you know, as long as I want to do it, I'll be doing it and I'll be able to.
What are you struggling with right now? What is it that you're working on? What are you grappling with?
Nothing right now. I'm just, you know, kind of enjoying an off season. I love trail running here in the winter, but I'm just saying that I think, for people to feel like, oh, I've, you know, I can only do this for X number of years or whatnot. I mean, fortunately, again, oh, look, knees go or hips go or you're bone on bone. There's only so much you can do about things like that. But, you know, that's kind of the nature of physical deterioration. But, you know, in absence of those kind of issues, I think you can train smart and recover right and have a long career.
Yeah, absolutely. Could not agree more. Well, Barry, it's been great catching up. I look forward to chatting to you about the individual disciplines next time out, but we'll save that for next time. Thanks for your time today on the Cone Edge.
Awesome. Thank you so much for having me.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Cone Edge. Don't forget to connect with us on social media. Simply search for the Cone Edge.